Hi, I'm Sam Smeltzer, and you're listening to the Heartworker Book Club podcast, where we talk about the powerful cultivation practice of reading and writing to inspire both personal and professional growth. We chat with authors about their stories, their books, and the art of the written word. Welcome to the club. I'm so happy you're here. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Heartworker Book Club podcast. I am so excited that you are here and that you are starting this journey with me. You know, I'm not new to podcasting. I've been doing it for about 7 years. And those of you that have been listening all that time with me on my primary podcast, the Heart of It podcast, or back in the day, Random Ramblings podcast, I'm so grateful that you're joining us for this venture. And you probably fully know and understand the evolution of this if you've been listening and watching and knowing that segment of the book club and what it has transformed into over the last 2 and 3 years. But, you know, this podcast is more than just the book club. The book club is this really special piece of this that I cannot wait to share with you this season of book club. But it also was created. I created this podcast because I wanted to speak to one of my major cultivation practices. So for those of you that don't know me, one of my primary things in my work is that I'm integrating traditional Oriental medicine teachings into the corporate wellness and growth art, I guess, if you want to say that. And so what that really means, I'm saying all these fancy terms to talk about professional development, how we have traditionally been taught as society has been missing something. And many of us say this all the time, missing something. In fact, if you listen to the kickoff for season 3 of the Heart of It podcast last week, Dave Chiaverini said it, that he felt like something was missing. And that something that was missing, I found it in this Eastern modalities, the great balance that we have been missing in many contexts is there. And so one of the things that this is taught, and we're talking about these classical Oriental teachings, is the focus on energy. You know, the thing that makes all of us come to life, the one that makes it that we're not just this physical organ, this body, that we're much more than that. There's a reason why we don't just fall in love with the first human we see. We fall in love. We have a whole emotional experience and we're attracted, and all the complexities of being a human are tied to the energetic body, the emotional body. And what I really was fascinated with, where I found this really big gap missing component, is this idea that we've never been taught how to care for it. And one of the ways that we talk about caring for it is cultivating new energy, invigorating, moving the energy through the body. And as I was learning medical Qigong, as I was doing yin yoga, I started to realize that there's other places that I gain the same benefits from those exercises. And one of them for me is reading and writing. So over the last 3 years, I have written technically 3 books. I say 2, but there is a second one that's in the middle that it's kind of like a workbook. So I think it's like 2.5. And I'm also getting ready this summer to launch my official 3rd book called Workplace Healers. But as I have been on this journey and finding my written voice, which I think is one of the most raw, authentic forms of my expression, it's truly where my art and I can just flow freely. I've really gained an appreciation not only for the art of writing and books, but also what I read on such a deeper level. On top of that, this is combined with this idea that I read in the book The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson several years ago. It's probably nearly a decade ago, where he invited you to read 10 pages a day of a book that serves you. Just 10 pages. And when I started this habit of just tackling 10 pages a day, or just consistently reading pages a day, I found myself using just 10 pages to connect with them and figure out what they meant for my own personal and professional evolution at that time. And I found that books, a library of written word, created one of the best educational curriculums that I needed for this world, for this agenda of life that we're all trying to live, for this journey to authenticity. And what's even more fascinating is how one book and one set of 10 pages within that book, depending on the time and where you are when reading it, it can come alive in a whole new way. So I say this because my goal for this podcast is to capture that magic of cultivation from reading and writing by sharing with you my writing process, some of my close friends that are authors or first-time writers, and what that process has been like. And then also share with you not only the growth that I get from reading those 10 pages a day, but what happens when others do that collectively. And that is what happened last year with the book club. You know, soon later this season, you're going to be reintroduced to Karen, Liza, and Ben, who were with me for that incredible journey on the Heart of It podcast. And if you want to revisit those episodes, highly encourage you do that before we dive in this year. And this year, they've picked their books rather than me picking the books. So they've really curated this journey. And we're actually going to blend that book process together. So we're going to actually read three books at the same time, pulling 10 pages a day from different books and then seeing how the lessons materialize. I'm really excited for this because this is actually how I cultivate from a reading practice. I don't usually just have one book that I'm reading 10 pages a day from. I have several books, like a stack. Usually there's stacks in different places, and I just have the practice of making sure I read 10 pages a day of something. And then really believing that intuitively what is meant to show up that day that I need to know about shows up and is what I'm reading. So that's just a little bit of a taste of what's coming this season. I'm so excited that you're here. We'll be having episodes released on a monthly basis and maybe perhaps growing that more. So if you love what you hear on these podcast episodes, let me know, because we basically make our decisions about what content we produce on an annual basis after hearing the listeners. So for example, the Heart of It podcast, the content just cut back in half because we heard from many of our listeners that there was just too much content and they felt overwhelmed that they couldn't get to all of it. So season three of the Heart of It podcast is coming out every 2 weeks. That also created the space for us to produce this podcast. So let us know about that. Also, let me know any other content that you love in this world and this arena that I'm building on this podcast that you would like to be included so that I can grow. I mean, one of the things that I love about birthing podcasts, and you can watch and witness the evolution of my primary podcast, is that it starts with an idea and then it organically evolves with the listeners. It becomes this collective community that we all do together. Yes, it's my voice that you're hearing on a consistent basis, but the other people who are invited into the conversation, the context of the conversation, are 100% usually catered by you and a comment you make, whether that's when you see me around town or you send me a quick email. You know, that's why I love podcasting. It's just this unbelievable networking opportunity that I have yet to find replicated in any other platform. So without further ado, I think we need to get this episode started. And I thought the best place to start is to talk about my book that came out last year, which is The HR Intuitive. And the reason I want to talk about it is because it's a great book to talk about my writing process. And a lot of people ask me about my writing process. So I thought I would tell you how that book materialized and kind of get that all out. And then also I would love to do a reading from there. And I'm actually going to read from one of my initial drafts. So the draft that the editor did not get to I shouldn't say didn't get to, she did get to edit it, but the draft before the editor worked her magic. So you're going to hear the actual raw initial draft that I put out there. And I think that that's something really important to know about my writing process. And I work with an incredible editor, Deanie Stevens, who I think, you know, now that I'm saying this out loud, has to come on this podcast because we need to talk to her. And she probably can introduce us to a couple of really great authors that we'd want to highlight on this podcast as well. But she is the owner and founder of Year of the Book Press. She is the one responsible for helping guide me to find my voice. In fact, that half book that I mentioned that I did not use Deanie as my editor, it did not feel like me. And I ended up going back to Deanie for the HR Intuitive because I felt like this book was so important for me to bring to life. And I knew that she had a better understanding of my voice than I did at that time. And she has just been this beautiful facilitator of awakening my writing voice. And I don't, you know, sometimes I think that there's this perception that the editor is going to take ugly words and then they transform it. And so basically what you're reading in a book does not reflect the author. I do not feel that at all when Deanie edits my work. Deanie makes my work stronger and more clear. And maybe that's something that will be demonstrated when I do my rough draft reading, is that you'll notice that she, if you read the actual chapter that's in the book, that she just makes it stronger when you read it and gets rid of excess, you know, excess words, or maybe me using words incorrectly, or putting in punctuation that helps the flow, so that what you're reading on your end is actually a true delivery of what I was hearing in my head when I was writing it down. And I think that's one of the really beautiful things about my relationship with Deanie as my editor, is she knows my voice when I'm writing. And so she can make a call when something has to stay, even though it might be a grammatically creative expression, I'm going to say it that way, because she knows that it helps to communicate what I felt or what I'm trying to share in its true authentic form. So I guess I say all that because, number one, I don't like to talk about my books without mentioning Deanie, because they really would not be possible without her. No matter how much she has to push me to get them written, she really does create the space that I'm able to just create and not worry about the end product, because she kind of keeps the pulse to tell me if I'm on track or not on track. So that's number one. Number two, it also tells you how important that editor is. I mean, the editor, I mean, she is my, I like to call her my writing coach more than my editor. I mean, yes, she does editing, but what I really value from her is that she is my writing coach. And so anyone who has coaching relationships and really values those for your personal or professional growth, if you're interested in writing, I highly encourage you find a relationship like that. And I guess that's why I speak about that, so that you know. And it also, that relationship becomes pivotal in the way that the HR Intuitive came to life, because the HR Intuitive is basically 33 lessons to awaken your inner guide. And when I met with Deanie and told her that I believed that it had to be 33, that was just intuitively something that really was resonating with me, that it had to be 33 mini lessons. I knew that it had to be mini lessons. I'll tell you that, you know, one of the ways that this became very clear to me is I actually read Rachel Hollis's book. I think that's what, yeah, Rachel Hollis's book. The very first one, Girl, Wash Your Face, maybe? I don't know. But the way the structure of the book was very small, short story-like lessons. And as soon as I saw the structure of her book, I knew that for this book, I wanted a similar structure. And so that's the way that other books serve as inspiration to us writers, when you look at those kinds of things. And you start to become a writer, you notice those kinds of things and become creatively inspired. So I really basically knew that loose format, that it was 33 lessons. And I also knew that I can't do research to premeditate what those 33 lessons are, that they were going to have to be organically, intuitively inspired. Dimi was like, well, do you have any idea what any of them are? And so we basically started to create an outline where I would dump ideas as they came to me. So she kept track of the topic headings for these lessons while I was writing. And so basically I went on a journey of writing 33 lessons and she kept track of these 33 lessons. I had no idea how they would intertwine with each other, if they would evolve, if they would build. I really had no clear concept of the flow. I just knew that each lesson needed to be powerful by itself, as well as really powerful as the collective. And when I felt inspired to write, I would sit down and write that lesson. One of the things that I really value about my writing is telling stories and experiences, because it's one of the best ways that I learn in life is through my experiences and reflecting back. And I hope to inspire others to do the same. And I also hope that I share experiences that are relevant and resonate with other people that are not, I would say, earth-shattering on the scale of trauma. However, they are still very impactful to us as individuals. And so I think those stories have to be told because I think sometimes we discount our experiences because we believe they should not impact us as heavily as they do. However, every experience in life is helping you to grow and evolve. So, when I write, I work very hard to put myself back in that story, back in that experience, and try to relive it through words in hopes that I invoke some sort of emotion, even if it happens to you for one sentence, so that hopefully it speaks to a depth inside of you that helps, which is my ultimate goal when I write. It's not just to, yes, it is definitely nourishing for me. It totally nourishes my soul, feeds my soul when I write. However, part of that fuel is the possibility that it's going to help someone else, that me sharing at this level of vulnerability is going to inspire somebody else and meet them where they're at in hopes that they can grow as well. And so that's literally how HR Intuitive really materialized. In fact, we're in the editing process for the book that's coming out in June and finalizing it, called Workplace Healers. And Dimi laughs at me because every time I say this, whenever I get the manuscript back after she's put all of my chunks that I sent her together, because literally I just send her chunks of the book. It's never one gigantic manuscript. And then she makes the gigantic manuscript. I'm always like, wow, I did it again. I actually wrote a book. It's like a real book. And if you see the HR Intuitive, I think it comes out to like 250 pages. I still am in disbelief that I can write 250 pages in a book. I mean, there's a lot in that book. I also don't ever anticipate that somebody reads the HR Intuitive from cover to cover. I always think of it as something that you can pick up and randomly read, something that can serve you at that time. That was the main goal there. So, you know, one of my main intentions for writing the HR Intuitive and why I felt so moved to make it happen is I really believe that it is the perfect climate for all of us to really awaken intuition, which is listening to our higher self that's deep within. You know, 2020 gave us this beautiful pause in life that I don't think any of us thought was possible. And in that stillness, we were given a chance to hear the rumblings of inside. And, you know, from a classical oriental teaching perspective, when they talk about the soul or the Shen, you know, it lies deep within the heart. And it has all this deep, this, it's this deep well and wealth of knowledge that we can easily dismiss unless we make a conscious effort to tap into. And in fact, there's this concept in traditional Oriental or classical Oriental teaching of shedding out, which is when the spirit basically leaves because it doesn't want to experience what you're encountering in life. And that could be when you're making a decision that maybe you're not really happy with. It could be when you're experiencing some horrible kind of trauma and it doesn't want to experience that as your soul. But the concept that our soul could want to leave temporarily and not be present with us, when I first learned that, was, you know, I don't want to say alarming, but kind of like a wake-up call. I mean, yes, there's going to be circumstances where it's going to happen naturally because it's trying to protect us. However, the idea that I really truly believe that we have found a way to manipulate and shen out on a regular basis, and that means that we're not connected to our true authentic selves at all. You know, as a medical Qigong practitioner, I do treatments. I shouldn't say treatments. They're protocols. They are sessions similar to Reiki. They're not treatments. That's not a bad word to use. And when I do that, there's a protocol basically that's all about identifying who you are, but it looks at who you are collectively, everything encompassing, not just the titles of who we are. But in this protocol, it allows us to hang out at this deep kind of spiritual level. And I find it just so powerful to give people the space to dwell there for a few minutes. And if I'm lucky, even 10 minutes, but just having time to really connect with who we are, there's just no words for that. And so my work really has been driven by finding ways to get everybody to be there. And the HR Intuitive is filled with 33 opportunities to do just that. I've pulled stories and experiences all across the board. If you want to put them on a woo-woo scale, maybe that's what it is, hoping that there are some that are safe enough for you to try to dip and go there and really connect with yourself in a way that I think is absolutely essential. So the HR Intuitive, I really believe, is going to become a foundationary book to do the things that I'm working on next in my work, workplace healers being one of them. I don't think that it's going to be possible to begin doing any of that work that is being called in our workplaces until you can tap into yourself intuitively and listen. And so hopefully the HR Intuitive becomes that place. Now, the last thing that I want to say, and then I'm going to do this beautiful reading, is the name of the book and the fact that I used HR in the title. My work will always be centered around HR when it comes to the world of business. My exposure and my path to business and understanding taking care of people was being introduced to HR and what its full capabilities are within an organization. I am not going to argue or debate with you about what HR and how it typically actually functions. I'm not going to go on a soapbox about why it is limited in its potential because of current business structures. However, I truly believe that we're not in a place to, annihilate and get rid of HR. I think it's time to actually put the structure in place to allow HR to deliver on what it was always intended to do. For me, when you read historically, HR represents the initial identification by operations in any management structure that something was missing. Yet no one has come through to truly identify what that thing is that's missing. And that's why we're talking about engagement and corporate wellness and culture. And now with the climate, retention and recruitment, you know, it all floats around this HR function. And it is, as my really good friend Cassandra Rose pointed out in one of my podcast episodes on the heart of it, you know, HR is still a really new profession. It is a baby profession when we look at it in terms of leadership and management. And so we are just at this pivotal kind of evolution, whereas if we're going to put it in the four stages of team development, that it got introduced and now it's in storming, and now it's time for us to get it to a place where it can have normative, productive practices so it can really, truly perform at the level that we want it to. Okay, so I'm going to just say that now, but in answer, because I know the question always comes up, and even Dave Shiverini, who's the literal voice of the HR Intuitive, who's recording the audiobook that's coming out this year, he has said, you know, that title really limits who picks it up, and these lessons are for everybody. And for me, an HR Intuitive, HR is anybody who is doing work associated with the people in business. So therefore, I believe managers and leaders are extension of HR. And I think when we don't view it that way, we have basically created a divide of responsibilities in regards to people. And so the ownership and responsibility of care and wellness for those people is on one side, while leadership and management are on the other, with a couple of exceptions that are crossing both and have seen the greater understanding. But why do you think that HR practitioners always want to bring their leaders to their conferences and educational offerings? Why do they want to share that knowledge? You know, one of the top training interventions I do for companies is teaching HR foundations to leaders, because HR is a part of leaders and managers' jobs. It has to be. Otherwise, it's saying like culture and employees is only the responsibility of one or one department. And that just doesn't make sense when it's one of the greatest assets, the most game-changing variable in nearly every business. Anyways, okay, I went on a little bit of a soapbox, but I'm gonna stop there. So I'm going to leave you doing a reading, as I promised, from the book, The HR Intuitive, of my rough draft. It is from chapter/lesson number 5 called Fear, the Greatest Limitation of All. You know, when I launched this book in 2021, we did a virtual book launch just to celebrate, because I didn't get to do a formal book launch because we were in a mist of lockdown and things were just really complicated. When we did this virtual book launch, Dave Shiverini was the MC and he read some chapters at the end and he just picked random ones. And it was really eye-opening for me because I totally forgot how much was actually in the book. And so when he read this chapter, I forgot that it was in here. And this is one of the few lessons that was written pretty close to being a journal entry, because it was as I was experiencing it. It was something that happened that year that was so important for me to share. And I think it also is because it became a part of my personal healing. And also a way for me to pay remembrance and respect to a loved one that I lost. So I'm going to leave it there as I start this reading, but wanted to give you at least some context. So here I am reading from the HR Intuitive, 33 Lessons to Awaken Your Inner Guide, lesson number 5, Fear the Greatest Limitation of All. I used to believe that I was afraid of death. But recently, it is not death that I fear, but the concept of not enough time. I can still vividly remember the days of sitting in a classroom, staring at the clock, thinking that 60 minutes was the longest interval of time ever. An hour back then felt like an agonizing lifetime. Now, 60 minutes feels like 5, and I spend my days wishing for a pause button, or I'd even settle for a slow mode. I find myself consistently reminding my children, just as my parents consistently reminded me, stop being in a rush to grow up. Enjoy the days of nothingness, because they will disappear all too quickly. The other reason that time gives me so much fear is that there is no way to control it. One of my favorite books of all time is The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. In it, Jeff stresses the importance of intentionally making time work for you rather than against you, which is basically the closest we can get to controlling time. But it's all we can do, is be intentional. In the end, we have no control over what the future holds and when time for ourselves will disappear. As I write this book, it is 2020, and I remember the anticipation from many as we entered a new decade, the overwhelming level of optimism about this being their year. I, on some level, also held hope that this year would prove something special. However, so far, it's proving to be special, but not in the manner that I imagined. In fact, if you remember, I began finally writing this book out of an inability to resist any longer. The life events of my marriage dancing dangerously close to the edge of ending took everything out of me. On a positive note, I can report at this time, as I write this lesson, my marriage is doing well. The separation is no more, and we are taking it one day at a time, as any great marriage should. I thought this was the worst that 2020 could offer. I should have known better that the outcomes of the year should not be determined within the first few weeks. But today, as I write this lesson, it is inspired by a sudden event that happened only 48 hours ago. The news came as I sat cozied up on a couch with my laptop in a cabin near Lake Harmony in the Poconos Mountains. I was on a retreat that my team takes every year, and I was writing, this book specifically. As I typed away, a text came through from my husband informing me that a close family friend was en route to the hospital by ambulance. After being found unresponsive, and an hour later, I received the news that he had passed. This was a friendship that I took selfishly for granted, because I assumed that there would always be time. I assumed that they would always be there, and then without any warning, they were gone. An inspiration. In the book on grief and grieving, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and David Kessler share the five stages of grief that have become a common go-to when someone experiences a loss. The five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Personally, I found myself free-falling through and actively transitioning from one stage to another over the days, like some sort of messed-up, torturous roller coaster of emotion. Even now, I am angry, in denial, sad, with also a sort of peace and acceptance. The loved one that I lost was a friend who came into my life nearly 15 years ago. He was a trusted mentor to my husband and helped him develop personally and professionally to become the incredible man he is today. But even though I did not work side by side with him on a daily basis, he was consistently present in my life. He also took a genuine interest early on in my life path. I could feel his reverence, which I know initiated from the growing relationship he saw developing between me and my husband at the time. 15 years ago, we were only dating. It was almost as if because Josh loved me, he must too. Regardless, he paid attention during every conversation, making whatever moments we had, no matter how brief, so impactful. He was there on my wedding day. He helped us move into our first true family home. He was at the launch of my business and the celebration when I released my first book. He was there for all of it. This is something I knew. I knew that he was there for me, for my husband, for us and our family. And without a doubt, I knew that he cared and I knew that he loved us. What I didn't recognize until the moment he was no longer here was the source of inspiration he was for me personally. Through some of the scariest and biggest moments in my life, he was there like a rock, providing assurance and stability. For me, his consistent belief in my work came at the times when I needed it most. These were usually times when I was desperately trying to believe in myself and resist the urge to just give up. These impactful moments typically manifested as a perfectly articulated and timed social media comment or a brief catch-up moment at a mutual attended event. Acts to many that may seem so small, but were monumental for me. The news of his death moved me in mixed directions. First, with thoughts of how do I carry on with this vacancy and lack of belief now present? Then with complete polar thoughts of undeniable determination to continue what I started to not disappoint him. The truth is, he was one of the few people that within a few minutes could instill in me a belief that anything is possible. In a matter of minutes, all fear would dissipate, and you would be filled with an undeniable optimism that could only be fueled by love. My friend achieved so much in a lifetime that was cut drastically short. What he did for me, he did for so many, and it breaks my heart when I think about what he would have done with more time. But I believe that he serves as an inspiration to us all at how precious time is and how we truly cannot control it. Fear is the greatest limitation of all. It is fear that prevents us from achieving what we are meant for, and it is individuals like my friend that empowers us to release fear to awaken further. I'm sure my friend had his own fears and routinely faced his own obstacles of limitations. I also have no doubt that he was surrounded by others who empowered him to tackle those fears and continue on his connected path. He clearly was able to move past fear, function from a place of love that allowed him to be of great service to so many. I share all this in hopes to inspire that if we release fear, we are capable of an impact and influence on others that surpasses any expectations we could imagine. The dangerous paralysis of fear. One of my popular speaking engagement topics is on a concept known as micro inequities. During this presentation, we explore the concept of how small subconscious nonverbals communicate discrimination or bias towards individuals. I also have come to believe that it is micro inequities that allow our biases and discriminatory beliefs to be passed on to future generations without ever saying a word. It was this understanding that made me passionate about micro inequities, especially being a mother. In this presentation, I share a story about my daughter Madeline at the age of 3 and how we encounter a situation where I could possibly communicate micro inequities to her, which telling the story, I typically describe her as a extrovert on steroids. I also state the fact, which is what it is, that Madeline goes into almost any social environment with the expectation that everyone in that space are now her friends. One time while sharing the story, I had an audience member raise her hand and ask, "Aren't you afraid?" The individual continued explaining that having a daughter that is so overwhelmingly friendly and unassuming of individuals could be a safety threat, and asked again that as a parent, wasn't I concerned? A little taken back by the question since it was the first time I ever had been questioned from this aspect, I responded the only way I could. I was honest. I was afraid. Madeline was overly social and assumed positive intent about everyone. Whenever I would talk to her about the concept of someone taking her, she would assure me saying, "No worries, mommy, they will bring me back." But at the same time, if I acted on my fear and isolated her or restricted the way on how she wanted to interact with the world, I would be molding her into an alternate version of herself. I would be forcing her to disassociate from her connected path. Now, this isn't a lesson on parenting, it's a lesson on fear, and my decision as a parent, if driven by fear, could limit Madeline. With all that being said, I feel it necessary to affirm that I'm not stupid with my children's safety. I don't send her down dark alleys to play by herself, or encourage her to take candy from strangers, or look for puppies and vans, but I am very cognizant of when fear is driving my parental decisions, and actively take that into consideration before deciding what's best moving forward. If you take a moment and consider anything that you are resisting in life right now, everything from going to the doctor, having a conversation with a friend, or changing jobs, your hesitancy is driven by a level of fear. Fear limits us. It is the number one way our ego, which we will talk about in another lesson, self-sabotages us. It is the number one reason for choosing to disassociate. So, what are you afraid of? Thank you so much for joining me on this very first episode of the Heartworker Book Club podcast. And I hope that you join me next month as I talk to you about my book that is coming out in June, which is called Workplace Healers. Until then, take care of yourself. Happy reading / writing / cultivating. Talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Heartworker Book Club podcast. I hope that it served you. And if it did, the best way that you can support this podcast is by leaving a review on your favorite listening platform. And until next time, happy reading and writing.